If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. What happens when influence isn't just about followers, but about power, ownership, and rewriting the rules of an entire industry? Today on Mission Critical, we're talking to Susan Yara, content creator turned beauty entrepreneur and the founder of Naturium, one of the fastest growing skincare brands in the business. She started out in front of the camera, built trust, community, and then flipped the script, turning her influence into infrastructure. Naturium scaled fast, stood out in a crowded market, and was acquired by e.l.f. Beauty for a reported $355 million. But behind the success story is a woman who's navigated every tension between personal brand and product brand, between representation and responsibility, between being taken seriously and staying true to where she came from. In this conversation, we talk about what it really means to have influence at last, not just in beauty, but in business. We get into the myths around being a founder, the double standards faced by creators, and what it means to be a woman of color building something powerful on her own terms. So whether you're scaling a startup, growing a platform, or simply figuring out how to make your voice matter, this episode's for you. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Toronto. Yeah. This is, how many times have you visited at this point?
I think I've been to Toronto 4 or 5 times at this point.
Okay.
So, and I love it. I love all the people here.
Yeah.
The food is delicious. I just wish the weather, you know, agreed with me a little bit more every time I come, because so far we haven't experienced the warm weather that people have
yeah.
told us about.
We were talking off camera, and I need to advocate for my city, and like, you will love it if you come here in the summer. The city comes alive, and you know, we're a city of many climates in a given day even. So have some trust in us. We're all good.
I believe you guys. So
what brings you to town?
Well, my brand Naturium, we launched in Shoppers Drug Mart probably a year and a half ago. So we're launching some new products here and we're celebrating it.
Major. Yeah. So that's a good place to start. Maybe if you can just, for people that are out of the beauty sphere, introduce yourself and like, what's the elevator pitch behind your brand in like one or two sentences?
So I started off my career in media, just like you.
Mm-hmm.
I became a beauty editor eventually, and this was at a time when digital media was just starting, which sounds crazy because you can't even imagine that nowadays,
yeah.
but it was just getting started. And so I really was in a very lucky place at the time. It didn't feel like it because it felt very embarrassing to be part of the digital teams, but it turned out it was basically, it set up my entire career. So I went on to start video networks for magazines like Forbes magazine and for People magazine. I worked with them for 5 years on their digital side, and then went to actual .coms like PopSugar, NewBeauty.com. I helped them create their entire video network, and then eventually decided, you know, I can do this on my own as a content creator. So I started a YouTube channel called Mixed Makeup, and I really focused on skincare education and cosmetic treatments. I was in Los Angeles, and after working at People magazine, we knew that there were so many cosmetic treatments that celebrities were doing, but just not talking about. Even just a decade ago, you couldn't get a celebrity to talk about Botox, right? And so now you fast forward and everyone talks a little bit more freely about the things that they're doing, or at least we now know. But when I was starting my YouTube channel, I really wanted people to know what was actually out there and available for them so that they could also have that access, or at least be aware that what they're seeing on camera has been tweaked.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, oh gosh, that just like brings me back to the whole era of like media and like the transition of media and how much things have truly changed, but also like the transparency that has come with it and like the conversations that we can have directly with our audience in so many different ways too. And now, fast forward today, you've built up this incredible beauty brand. And how has that journey been like for you?
I mean, it's been great. We're only 5 years old, so we're still technically considered a baby brand in this industry. But I tell people that I've been building the brand for 10 years because I've been online for, you know, I think my YouTube channel is now about to be 11 years old. So I always say that it was the buildup of that and educating people and really creating this community and this motto around skincare. And helping people understand what they needed for their skin. And it wasn't about several steps necessarily or specific price points or something when it came to your products. It became more about what is your skin type? What are you dealing with? And what are the ingredients that you can use that will actually benefit your skin?
Yeah, yeah. So how would you say that your history working in media and then going into creating content helped prepare you for the entrepreneurial life and like the CEO, like building a business?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even say that it was being in the media that set me up for building a business. It was more when I think back to my childhood, my mom's Korean and she's very entrepreneurial. Like she's always got these great ideas. So since I was a child, she always had me helping her with little business ideas that she would have. So she ran a gift shop for a while. She had a video store, if anyone remembers what a video store is. So I would have to help her with all these different businesses. And I learned a lot about managing people and working with customers and, you know, the things that can go wrong on the back end of it and even having to close down a business, for instance. And I think that was just from a very young age that I just kind of, my mom instilled a lot of this in me. And then, you know, when it came to working in the media, the thing that I really took from that that helped me as a content creator and then to build a brand is that we have analytics, right? When we work in the media, we're constantly looking at our analytics. What's getting the best engagement? What topics are actually working for our viewers, right? The same thing happens when you're a content creator. You are, if you're smart about it, you can look at that and see the white space in a potential brand that you want to build, whatever topic that it is that you talk about, I guess, online. For me, again, it was skincare. So I started to be able to see, well, what are the topics that my viewers are most interested in when it comes to skincare? What price points are they spending? What, you know, ingredients are they most interested in? What skin issues do they deal with? Where are they shopping at, right? So we knew early on that we wanted Target in the United States to be our first retail partner. And that was because we knew where my viewer was shopping.
So and a lot more information that you can glean.
There's so much information that you have at your fingertips if you really look at it.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, so transitioning from your role, I mean, you're still obviously like creating content and everything and doing what you were doing before, but there's an added layer of running a business now.
Yeah.
Do you think that having the history of being a content creator has helped you in terms of how you are advocating for your business or, you know, talking to investors? Like, how has that experience been like for you as someone that has had a background in that?
Yeah, I'd say that if anything, it just prepared me for what the world looks like, right? When I was starting my YouTube channel, Mixed Makeup, I really thought it was going to be kind of like an online magazine or something. And, you know, the digital space was starting to transition to influencers, but it hadn't done that yet. So I'd gone to potential investors and said, you know, here's my pitch. This is, I think I want to create, you know, this YouTube channel for women who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and because they're underserved when it comes to YouTube at the time, right? And all these investors, mostly men, were just like, you're a little old. I was 30 at the time. You're a little old to be on YouTube. Maybe you should find hosts that are in their teens, like early 20s, and have them online talking about beauty products. And I was like, no, you don't understand. When I look at the analytics, there are women who are looking for the content that tells them what skincare products they should be using. They want somebody who's actually dealing with aging issues to tell them what they should be using. They want stuff that they want, you know, video content that's well produced, features actual experts in it, like dermatologists and plastic surgeons, so that they know that there's an authority behind it. And these guys were just like, no, we're not biting. And so I decided to just start the YouTube channel myself, and it showed, right? There were these women that really, at the time, they weren't engaging with social media the way that teens were, right? They weren't subscribing to channels. They weren't necessarily even leaving comments at the time, but they were searching, right? Mm-hmm. They were looking for specific topics, whether it was food topics, like how to cook something or a recipe, or should I get Botox? what happens when you get a rhinoplasty, what goes on behind a facelift, right? They're looking for this kind of stuff. How do I deal with my crow's feet? So when they're searching that stuff, they weren't getting the content that they wanted. So if you put it out there and it was well produced, then they would watch it.
Yeah. So given all of that in your experience, two-part question.
Yeah.
How do you define influence for yourself? Mm-hmm. And also, has that definition changed over the years, over the course of your career?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people lately, when they are told that they're an influencer, or they say they're an influencer, I think they have different meanings, right? To me, an influencer is somebody who actually influences you to do something, whether that's a purchasing decision, to start dressing a specific way, whether it's your wellness that you start taking care of yourself or something, you start working out more, start changing your diet. I feel like that is an influencer now. So you can have a small following, but you influence a lot of people, or you can have a large following and influence people. And then there are content creators, and maybe these are people who, they put up content, but maybe they're not influencing anybody. Maybe they're educating. Educating would probably influence people, but maybe they're just entertaining, right? And so I think there are a lot of different categories that you can fit into now when it comes to being online.
Yeah, because those two things, like influencer and content creator, are I've seen those used interchangeably a lot.
Yeah.
But also, like, the way that you're defining it is like they also can be two different things as well.
Yeah, they can be same or they can be completely different. And I think it's depending on what a person wants to, influencer sounds like it has a little bit of a bad connotation to it at this point, because you can meet somebody who claims to be an influencer, but what are they really doing, right? Like,
yes.
You don't know.
Yeah.
But then you can actually meet somebody with real influence online.
Yeah. How do you manage, what has your experience been like, how do you manage, drawing separation between building up your personal brand and building up the brand of your business, especially when those two are so intertwined? Do you try to separate the two, or does it benefit to have them so integrated with each other?
Well, I think that you should start, whenever you're thinking about starting a brand, whether you are online and you have influence or a community, you should still be creating a brand that feels separate from you. It can have, a little bit of a spirit of you, right? Mm-hmm. Because people will expect that, but I think that you should be building it separately. So for instance, Naturium is the name of my brand. It's clearly not my name, right? Because I don't want to be so attached to it that it can't go on and live without me, right?
Yeah.
And I think that if you're trying to grow a business and scale it and eventually get it acquired, you're not gonna have as much success getting it acquired if your name is so attached to it, right? Mm-hmm. You wanna make sure that it can actually truly live on. I'm not gonna live for the next 200 years, but hopefully the brand will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, people might not know who I am, and that's okay if the brand keeps on going. So I think it's important from the beginning to start that. So the social media that we have and the marketing that we have for Naturium has always been very separate from me. I promote the brand on my own social media, and I educate the way I always have.
Mm-hmm.
But on Naturium social media, it's very focused on the brand only.
Right. So if we kind of like rewind to like the early days when you were kind of thinking about starting the brand and laying out the plans, like what was your thesis around the brand? And also like being someone that has seen so many brands in the space, and it's a pretty busy space.
Yeah.
What did you think that the brand could offer that was different from the sea of other makeup brands and beauty brands out there?
I mean, we can say it. We don't need any more beauty brands, right? Like there are plenty on the market, but I don't think that means that each brand is doing it right. And that's what the big problem is. I think that every industry, but the one that I'm in specifically, the beauty industry, can feel a little bit stale. It's just doing the same thing over and over and over again when we actually have access to so much more information now. We have new skincare ingredient technology that we can access, right? We don't have to have such expensive formulas on the market. people really only see a change with their skin if they're consistent with it. But if they're spending $400 on a cream, they're going to be precious with it. They don't want to waste it.
Sure.
They're not going to be consistent and continue buying that product, right? So these were the things that I kept looking at. And so I was like, okay, well, vitamin C is really popular, but people have to spend $150 to get a serum that hasn't been updated since it came out, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they want to do that? Why would they want a flip phone when they can have an iPhone, right? That kind of thing. So these were the little things that we were looking at. And so really with Naturium, we made sure that all of the formulas are biocompatible with your skin, meaning that Your skin recognizes the ingredients. It's gentle on your skin, and so you won't have a bad reaction to it. Instead, you're just gonna see changes with your skin, and it's not gonna be excessively expensive, right? We try to make it as accessible as possible. I wouldn't say it's completely affordable for everybody, mm-hmm. but we do try to make the pricing make sense. That way somebody actually can be consistent with their skincare routine, because you're not gonna see a change with your skin until you've used a product every single day for 6 weeks minimum, right? And then you have to actually wait another like 2-3 months before you actually see the true changes with your skin. But who commits to that, right? But if you've got products that you love, they're not that expensive, but they're amazing, they're working just as well as your expensive products, if not better, then you're gonna continue doing it, right?
Yeah.
So that was really the whole purpose behind the brand. We make sure that we're looking at skincare ingredient technology. So going back to vitamin C, if it's unstable and it, you know, oxidizes quickly and it can be a little bit acidic on the skin and cause irritation, well, what can we do to change that? So we found a vitamin C ingredient that is conjugated with gold and glutathione. And so what that basically means is if, have you ever had like icebreakers gum?
Yep.
So like, you know how when you chew it,
yeah.
the little flavor
yep.
bubbles pop,
yep.
right? So that's essentially what we do. We use a lot of encapsulation with our ingredients, like vitamin C. So it's conjugated, encapsulated with these ingredients. And so it's like this little formula living within the bigger formula. So it doesn't actually break open until you're massaging it onto your skin.
Right.
Then it actually helps penetrate your skin a little bit better. You have that better stability and efficacy because it hasn't oxidized. So it just turns into a much better formula for your skin.
How much, you know, in terms of the conversation that you have with your consumers and your audience, how much is education a part of that whole process? Like, do you expect people to have an understanding of everything that we're talking about right now, or do you find that they need to be kind of walked through that process as well?
We try to make sure that the majority of people, we assume the majority of people don't know this stuff. Mm-hmm. So we yeah. try to educate them, whether it's with our social media, with videos that I create about the products that we're launching. We try to break it down as easily as possible and help them understand why they should be using these products. But for the most part, you know, vitamin C serums make sense to people, right? They've heard about this now. Using a retinol makes sense to them. They know why they need to use a moisturizer, but we try to break it down even more for them.
Yeah. What's like the hero product for you right now that's like the one?
The one. So I would say that our most popular product is our vitamin C complex serum. That's probably our top selling product overall. We have a body wash called the Glow Getter Multi-Oil Body Wash that just feels amazing on your skin. It has 50% glycerin, which glycerin's this OG humectant. It's been used in beauty forever, but it's just really good. And when you have it at that high percentage, even when you're rinsing it off of your body, it continues to hydrate your skin. Mm-hmm. So people get out of the shower and some of them feel like they don't even have to put lotion on. I don't know what that's like because I have dry skin. I'm a dry skin girly, so I'm like moisturizers, hydrators, all the things, right?
Yeah.
But for some people who don't want to have that extra step, they actually feel like this moisturizes their skin enough. So we have those types of products. We have another product that I just think is fantastic. It's a holy grail for me. It's called the Multi-Peptide Advanced Serum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, peptides are becoming this really big conversation in the skincare industry. And a lot of people just don't know what they do, right? You hear this and you're like, okay, I think I need peptides. There are so many peptides to choose from. But at the very least, they're very hydrating for your skin. They're also humectants, right? So we have a few peptides in this serum. Some of them are acting as antioxidants, and antioxidants are great for your skin. Just like vitamin C, they can help fight free radical damage, which we're exposed to all the time, whether it's from the sun, pollution, whatever it is, right? So they're helping to fight that. I kind of think of it as, if you think of like Pac-Man, like they're kind of like eating away at the free radicals that you're exposed to. And then that can in turn help your sunscreen work a little bit harder because it's got less, you know, work to do.
Yeah, less lifting.
Exactly. It's got like a little team helping out, right? And then it also has a peptide that's very nice for your skin to just boost it, firm it, and give it that plumping effect. So you just feel like you look a little bit better.
Sure.
So I feel like that's a really popular product. It's a little bit newer, so it's starting to really gain that traction. So we've started to grow that collection of our multi-peptide collection. So we actually just at a Shoppers launched, this is why I'm here, our multi-peptide rich cream, which is amazing.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
So, okay, so like I just recently, at the beginning of the year, went through this like whole like YouTube black hole of like just like trying to understand skincare because I'm like, okay, just feel kind of like overwhelmed, and I was just trying to understand like just the names of the ingredients that I'm seeing most commonly. So there's like a really big universe in terms of beauty in general. From your perspective, what do you think is the most interesting thing that's happening in beauty? What's the most interesting conversation? It doesn't necessarily have to be like an ingredient thing, but also just like a cultural discourse. Like, what do you think is really interesting for you? For us, coming from someone that has seen a lot, you know?
Yeah. I was saying that when I first got started online, you couldn't get anybody to talk about their Botox, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen a huge shift now, right? Where it's almost like we see too much stuff getting done, right? Like we're seeing 22-year-olds getting Botox and filler and looking like they're in their 40s.
Yes.
Because,
yeah.
And not necessarily in a bad way, they look beautiful, right? But they just look way more mature.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many people on, you know, like the like Ozempic, right? For instance. And I think that we've almost swung too far the other direction to the point where people aren't, they're almost like seeing it as too accessible, too easy to just get done. And they're not thinking about the consequences of that. Whereas I've been in this since I was in my 20s, right? And I'm in my 40s now. And now I've had to do all the things like get my filler dissolved mm-hmm. because it was starting to look gross in my 40s, right? And have to switch over to things like biostimulators, which are really interesting. That's an interesting conversation in this industry as well.
Okay.
And that's, you know, like injectables that are more, they stimulate your body to produce the things that you want, right? Like collagen
sure.
or fat, for instance, in your skin so that you're getting a more natural look because you're just using your body to, you're just making it more efficient again,
yeah.
essentially, right?
Yeah.
So we're seeing this kind of like flip where we're going to, I guess like the flip side of everyone doing things too much or too early in their lives. And so I think this is something that we're just going to continue, you know, just paying attention to and seeing, especially with these younger celebrities. Suddenly we're seeing, you know, we don't know exactly what they've done, but we've seen celebrities like we've seen celebrities like Kylie Jenner
yep.
and Lindsay Lohan. They suddenly look like different people in a good way, right?
Yeah.
Like they look refreshed suddenly. And, you know, everyone's just like suspecting that they must have dissolved all their filler, gotten rid of all the like bad work, and then gotten facelifts or something, which who knows,
yeah.
right? But this is all speculation on what it is that they're doing because now they have to just kind of go back and fix everything.
Right.
And they have the time and the money to be able to do this, right? They can get these procedures done, disappear for 6 months, and then come back and look amazing, and nobody knows what it is that they did. Whereas like the everyday person needs to be a little bit more aware of this, that they might have to be fixing things in the future,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, and it's like kind of like a pendulum. It's like you just go too far into one end and then things start to swing back.
Yeah, so.
That's very interesting.
We'll keep hearing more. I think with Ozempic, it's so amazing and what it's done for people who truly need it for their health, whether they're overweight, they're diabetic, whatever it is. But then we see the vanity reasons that people are using it. And I'm not judging. I'm a vain person. I got into the beauty industry, right? Like I understand wanting to look good.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, again, people like jump on these things so quickly without thinking about potential consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. So the trajectory of the brand, you're now part of the Elf family,
mm-hmm.
and which was like major turning point for the company, especially a company that is as young as yours.
Yeah.
What were kind of like the trade-offs or kind of the considerations that came with that acquisition? Like what changed, if anything, in terms of how you were leading the company and, you know, your ultimate kind of, you know, goals for the company too?
Yeah. I wouldn't really call it trade-offs,
mm-hmm.
right? We were at a point in our business that we were growing so quickly, which is a really big, it's a great problem, I guess, to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're growing so quickly, we were about 3 years old and we were at like $80, $90 million in revenue. And when you're growing that quickly as a indie brand, it's hard to have cash flow, right? So you're trying to constantly keep up with your growth, but also maintain the business. And
totally.
That can be that crossroads for a lot of brands and whether they're going to be able to stay open or not. For us, because we have an online presence as well, we were, you know, digital first as far as our sales and everything. We got a lot of requests to have more distribution, right? To expand to Canada, to expand to the UK, to Australia, all these different countries want to have us there and retailers want us, right? But how do we do that if we don't have the ability to grow that quickly? It
mm-hmm.
takes money, it takes more staff, it takes more product, it takes just so much more, and you just can't do that very quickly as an indie brand, right? Unless you take lots of investment, but that's also then another consideration,
yeah.
right? So ELF was truly this perfect match for us because that is exactly what they came in to do, right? We get economies of scale with them. They have everything's just so much more efficient because they've been doing it for a while. They're a much bigger company than us. They offer a lot of help on the operations side, so we get that assistance as well, and we've been able to expand so much quicker while being under the ELF family. So it's been really fun having them as our parent company. I'd say the big changes are, you know, they are a bigger organization, but they're not so corporate that it feels like it's soulless and that it's like lost its touch, you know? Yeah. So they bought us at a time when we were growing so quickly that they just trusted in us to keep this going.
Yeah.
So nothing really has changed that much except for, you know, efficiencies and growth.
When you started the business, knowing now that it was going to go through this major change, you know, even 3 years in, like, is that something that you expected was going to happen?
Yeah.
Like, were you really like, yeah, this is going to happen? Or,
yeah,
you know, or was it something that just like was like a really amazing surprise and a beautiful circumstance?
Yeah. I hear a lot of people talk about like, what's that saying? Imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never experienced this. And I'm not trying to say this as like a person who's like, I'm not trying to say it like, oh, I'm so delusional that I just know and I'm so full of myself.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
that. I just know that I have worked so hard. And I feel like my old business partner and I really had a vision for this brand and knew what we wanted to do with it. So to us, it just felt like nothing could get in our way because we knew what we were doing. We knew what we wanted to do with this. We were a great partnership. And I don't know, there was just something about that when you're putting in that time and that work, it's impossible to feel imposter syndrome because you are busting your ass, right? Like, why would you feel like an imposter when you know you're putting in the work, right?
Mm-hmm. So you executed on the vision.
Yeah, and so I think that when you have that clear vision, obviously we have challenges that we're dealing with, right? We got acquired because we needed ELF to come in and help us out, right? We needed that growth with them. I'm sure we would have figured it out if we didn't do that, but still, it's like there are obviously obstacles along the way, but when you have that vision and you're so committed to it, you're going to charge through it, you know?
Mm.
Maybe it's like also having like immigrant parents and stuff. It's like, we're sticking with it. My mom wouldn't allow it otherwise, you know? She's like, you started it, you finished this.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, but you know, I just feel like my old business partner and I really just, we knew what we wanted with this brand, and this was the vision from day one.
So speaking of your family, what do you, you know, you mentioned earlier in the interview, your mom is Korean.
Yeah.
What was your earliest influences around beauty? Like, what was kind of your earliest memory around that?
I mean, Korean moms they're in it right away, right? You start getting like a little pimple or a blackhead and your mom is like, okay, we're going to take care of this, right? So when I was around 12 and I was really starting to hit puberty, my mom was like, you need a skincare routine. So she took me to the Clinique counter, just like many people, many millennials at the mm-hmm, time, right? Mm-hmm. And I got on the three-step system and that really kind of kicked off my skincare journey. And it was from that young age, you know, my mom was always constantly playing with beauty products and loved skincare, you know, since I was a little girl. So she was in it.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. You know, the beauty industry has really long profited from diversity without always necessarily empowering it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do you ever feel like you were expected to kind of represent more than your business in terms of your community? Like, has that ever been a pressure on your shoulders?
I wouldn't call it a pressure, but definitely something that I was excited to be able to add into, you know, I guess the ethos of Naturium, right?
Mm-hmm.
We, from a very early, like as soon as we started it, we knew that we wanted to be inclusive, but not make it so in your face, because I know what it's like to be the token, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like in every situation, whether it was work or school or sports or anything. So I didn't want any of our community to feel like they were being tokenized, in that like we're choosing to honor them during one part of the month, you know, like one month of the year or something, or, you know, choosing them for this campaign because we just need that one person to fit this, you know, this bill. So instead, we just make sure that the brand feels inclusive and we've thought about them. We've been thoughtful from every single step of the way, right? And I think that that's actually translated well. We have amazing diversity in our demographics. I'm not going to try to spit out all the percentages. I would have had them for me. I had them with me like 2 years ago when we were going through our acquisition process. But, it's not just about, I tell people this, it's not just about, you know, skin tone and inclusivity. We're also thinking about skin issues in the way that we're formulating. So every aspect of that is included in the brand. And I think that people who, I think you just know, like when you start to read about the brand and when you're looking at specific products and what issues they're tackling, you know that they're speaking to you. Like if you have more melanated skin, for instance, right? You deal with hyperpigmentation more, mm-hmm. right? Dark mm-hmm. spots, uneven skin tone, that kind of stuff. Well, we've created products that address that, right? Whether that's, you know, a product that you thought you couldn't use before, guess what? We formulated it in a way, when you're reading that, you know we're talking to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When it comes to our marketing, the imagery that we use, we've been inclusive from day one, and it hasn't felt like, it's felt more to me like what I know is my life, right? Where it's this life of diversity. I'm half Mexican, half Korean. My nieces are black. I have another niece who, you know, her dad is white. Like mm-hmm. I have, my kids are half Indian. You know, like we have a lot of diversity. My family is this. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted the brand to feel like it represents everybody without feeling like it's in your face.
Exactly. There's a way to address a community and be diverse and inclusive mm-hmm. without having to be so on the nose about it too.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And it's kind of the way that we wish that we were spoken to growing up as well, right?
Exactly.
I'm curious, you know, there's been such a diversity of different beauty brands that have come up. You know, a lot of them founded by other people of color and people from diverse communities. What's that experience been like for you, if any, talking to other beauty founders and connecting with them, especially for people who are from minority communities? Like, what are the conversations that you guys have and just kind of, I don't know, have there been any kind of pinch me moments where you're like, okay, this is like amazing because I'm seeing other people like me or people who have had similar lived experiences doing it, you know?
I mean, I one of the things that I really pride myself on is that instead of being competitive with other founders, I become friends with other founders, right? Mm-hmm. We support each other, we help each other out because it can be a very lonely path otherwise, right? Because you're doing all these things that you can't talk to everybody about, right? Like you don't necessarily meet a person. I can't go to my mom and be like, Mom, so, you know, we need to figure out how to, like, this supply chain issue. You know, like, my mom would be like, what? So I can't go to my, like, girlfriends necessarily and talk about that unless they're in the industry.
Yeah.
So when you're a founder, you know, you have all these types of things. You even want to just talk about how do you work with your employees and your staff to keep them motivated. when you're talking to other founders and you're friends with them, you can actually have these types of conversations. Especially, you know, other Asian founders, for instance, there are a lot of us in the skincare industry now. It's fun to hang out. I mean, I was just like in New York, I was at dinner with two other founders, mm-hmm. for instance, and we're chatting not just about the brands, but just life in general. And we're there to support each other. And I think that you grow faster and bigger because of that.
Yeah. And it's just cool to see other people just living their dream and just doing it. And those two things don't have to be mutually exclusive in terms of like, you know, competition versus like, mm-hmm. a collaborative kind of community effort, you know?
I say this all the time. Other people's success has never hindered my success, right? Mm. Whenever I see other people succeeding, I'm pumped for them and they're equally pumped for me.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have like a core crew that you're like, that's within the beauty community that you're like, yeah, these are my ride or dies?
I would say other content creators mostly, mm-hmm. Just because that's where it really got started. But when it comes to other beauty brands, there are a lot of people that I feel like I'm really good friends with. There's a woman named Nancy Twine. She started a hair care brand called Briogeo. Both happen to also live in Miami. There's a woman named Leah Yu who has Crave Beauty. We got started as content creators and got to know each other through that first. And then we both now have brands. She's one of the people that I actually just saw not too long ago.
Amazing.
Let's see. Just there are so many. I love Amy from Tower 28. She's great. We've chatted so many times about different things going on, you know, like different phases of the acquisition process, getting an investor, that kind of stuff. So
yeah. It's important to kind of surround mm-hmm. yourself with a core crew that kind of understands both lived experiences, but also like just like the business journey as well, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, in an industry that's still very much dominated by a lot of like legacy players, how do you disrupt and disrupt is also, I feel like, a word that's been used a lot, but how do you make an impact, not just with product, but with the perspective that you have with your brand?
Well, I think that the legacy brands, you know that you've made an impact when you see them doing the same thing that you're doing, right? When you see them using the same kind of, you know, marketing, the same kind of ingredient focuses, and, you know, like when I saw, I don't even know, I actually shouldn't say this. Hold this one back, we'll talk about it off camera. But when you see a big brand, you know, putting out commercials where they're, you know, using truly the same language as you when it comes to your marketing and your copy, you're like, okay, they see what we're doing, yeah, and they're trying to catch up now, right?
Yeah.
So I'm really proud of that, actually. When I see bigger brands, the legacy brands, trying to do the same thing that we're doing, it means that we're changing the industry, which mm-hmm. I think it needs, right? I like I said earlier, I feel like it can be a little stale. Things haven't really changed. So now that's starting to happen, and I think indie beauty brands are really disrupting when it comes to that. I think that customers are much more interested in these indie brands as well because they just speak to them more, right? Well, I think also remembering, right, that you're also a customer.
Yeah.
And when you speak to customers, you probably have the same kinds of thoughts when you're looking for a product to buy, whether it's in the beauty industry or fashion or any kind of other, you know, consumer packaged good, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to decide why this speaks to you. Why should you buy this? How does it stand out, right? So we take that approach in the way that we market Naturium. Instead of being flashy and telling you all these things that it does that you wouldn't even understand, you're like, well, but I still don't understand what I use this product for, right? And I think this is something that happens in the beauty industry all the time. You're like, okay, this sounds like a great product for my skin, but what do I do with this? Why would I need this, right? So instead, you know, I've worked with my team to really be just straightforward. People are more educated when it comes to skincare now. They know what they want and don't want. So just tell them why they need this instead of trying to be flashy and market to them in a way that just doesn't make any sense, because that's what they used to do, you know?
And there's a lot of like clutter and marketing and noise and stuff. And sometimes so people just need like a simple, straightforward.
Yeah, just tell them about why do you need this?
Yeah.
What's it going to do? That's
it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ultimately, you know, building the business, what is like your kind of like your long game? What's kind of like the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan? And what's like kind of like the thing that's most exciting for you?
You know, for me, we really, because we're a baby brand, we really haven't grown to be a household name yet, right? Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it's becoming a household name where people know that they have access to amazing skincare. They don't have to break the bank to get it. And they start to see a change in their skin because of it in a positive way, right? One of the best things to me is when I'm out and about and people come up to me and they're like, you have helped change my skin. I feel more confident. I'm so happy to go out without makeup. I don't even feel like I need makeup because of it, or my makeup looks even better on me. Guys come up to me and they're like, my wife put me on your body wash first, and then I started using your sunscreen or your serum or whatever. And they're like, you know what? I'm in. Yeah. Like, I want to start doing my skincare more, and I want to actually take care of my skin and feel good about myself. I think that people forget that your skin really has an impact on your psyche and how you feel and your confidence. And so to me, it's just giving more people access to that.
Yeah, because there's a bigger conversation, you know, your skin and skincare is kind of like a vehicle to talk about larger things when we talk about like our self-confidence, the way we present ourselves in the world, you know, how much we're wearing and how little we're wearing. Like, there's so many other things that are a part of that dialogue, right?
Yeah, I mean, imagine when you have like a pimple, just one pimple. Some people deal with breakouts all over their face or on their body somewhere, and how it makes you feel, right? Mm-hmm. Especially someone on camera. Mm-hmm. You get one pimple and you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, somebody help me. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. Why is this? And it's like nobody else can see it, but you feel like you've just got like a radar on your face, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, if you can help manage that, to help teach people how to manage their skin and be more confident with it, then it just changes everything for them.
Yeah, yeah. What I think is also really interesting right now is just seeing a lot of influencers and content creators that have used their platform in the community to build business that is not necessarily like directly associated with them too.
Yeah.
What are you seeing from your end in terms of like that whole momentum and that wave of, you know, because I think like influencers and content creators are by DNA and the nature of what they do, entrepreneurs, because mm-hmm. you are representing yourself, your business is yourself. And so it makes total sense to take that skill set and apply it to building another business. What are you seeing out there in terms of other people that are in as influencers or content creators creating their businesses, and what's kind of exciting about it?
Yeah, this is actually one of my favorite topics, because a lot of people don't realize that the majority of content creators and influencers are women. And I think that, you know, we still haven't caught up with women being seen as true entrepreneurs and leaders when it comes to business. But when you think about it, there are millions, if not maybe even billions now in the content creator industry, and it's run by women, mm-hmm. right? We hear about people like Mr. Beast, who obviously is a beast when it comes to business, when it, you know, using his image online and turning that into several different businesses. But there are also so many women who are doing this, right? Whether they're starting little businesses from that content creation, or they have small businesses and they're using content creation to promote those businesses. And I think that people are getting more savvy to the fact that if they can do this online and be social media creators, right, they can absolutely start a business. And so we're just going to continue seeing that, I think, over and over again, where more brands, whether it's beauty or other kinds of brands, we're going to see a lot more influencers creating yeah. businesses, because it makes sense. How long can you really, I mean, I say this and then I've been online for decades at this point. I'm like, how long can you really be online? Well, it turns out you can be online forever. but you know, you also start to think like, okay, you know, that doing things like sponsorships where that becomes your primary source of revenue, mm-hmm. that gets old, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to have to be beholden to saying, you know, everything that a brand wants you to say, or you know, to this advertisement that, yeah. you know, your viewers don't want to see, right? Obviously, it's necessary because you need to be able to make some money. And this is how network television makes money. They do ads, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing for a content creator, but that gets old. You want to be able to continue being authentic to yourself. And so starting a business that makes sense for your personal brand, I think, is the way to go.
And I just think that it makes total sense from, like, even, like, you know, on surface value, from like an investor standpoint, like, you've got an audience that's already baked in and like is already familiar with the person that's leading a new brand. And mm-hmm. so why wouldn't you explore that further, you know?
Exactly. And I think that a lot of people see it as like, if they see celebrities and influencers start brands and they're like, oh, this is going to bomb. They're like, well, why would anybody invest in this? But that's exactly why, right? Mm-hmm. People forget that they don't hear about the thousands of other brands that started and then closed quietly, because guess what? You never heard about
them.
Exactly. Because they didn't have somebody who already had a built-in audience, right? Yeah. So you're taking a much better chance investing in someone who has an audience than someone who doesn't.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to continue seeing that.
And the trust that comes with that too.
Absolutely. If they can prove, again, content creators need to look at their analytics, right? That is a smart entrepreneur. You look at your analytics. You know, I've had people come up to me and say, you know, I've got this social media following. I want to start a brand. And then I'll say, well, what's the brand? What kind of stuff do you want to sell? And they'll tell me, and I'm like, do you sell that stuff now? And they're like, no. And I'm like, then why do you think that should be the brand that you start, right? It should be what you already see is selling to your customers, right? Yeah. To your viewers. So I think that as long as you're really being authentic to your personal brand and who you represent online, then you're going to have a successful business.
Yeah. Great business advice to end our chat. I really appreciate our you making the time while you're here for a hot minute in Toronto. And, you know, it's been really wonderful learning more about your business and just kind of how incredible that trajectory has been and just the point of view that you have with it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Susan. That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.